Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this day back in 1968 that singer Debbie Gibson did what? Was it A, she performed a Halloween concert at West Point wearing a sailor's costume? Was it B, she held a séance to contact pianist-entertainer Liberace? Was it C, she sang her hit song, Foolish Beat, for President LBJ at the White House? Or was it D, she ran in the New York City Marathon, finishing in 4 hours, 14 minutes, and 54 seconds? Debbie Gibson did what on this day in 1968? And question number two, why did the singer Dion on this very day back in 1963 storm off of a taping of the British TV show Ready, Steady, Go? Was it A, the record to which he was lip-syncing on TV got stuck? Was it B, he wandered aimlessly on stage while singing his hit song Run Around Sue? Was it C, the go-go dancers on the set were distracting him? Or was it D, the cue cards being shown to him were for the wrong song he was singing? So, what was the reason for Dion's departure? And in our transitions, we have this from onthisday.com, because today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of October 31st. Well, it was on this day, back in 1894, that billboard advertising was published for the very first time. It later became known simply as billboard. 1894, today. And it was on this very day, 27 years ago, 1998, that Kiss kicked off its Psycho Circus tour with a Halloween extravaganza in Los Angeles, California. The Smashing Pumpkins, of course, were the opening act, and that was 1998 today. The Nitty Gritty Dirt Band's Raleigh Durham Reel introduces our country music news. Catching up with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. The Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, NGDB, is extending its farewell tour into 2026 to celebrate its 60th anniversary with new tour dates and the new EP, Night After Night. The All the Good Times, the Farewell Tour, 60 Years of Dirt, includes new dates for 2026 with tickets going on sale October 31st. Recent news also highlights the release of the Dirt Does Dylan album, which features covers of Bob Dylan's songs. The Nitty Gritty Dirt Band will play its 60th anniversary show on May 13, 2026, at the Opry House in Nashville, making the exact date they became a band 60 years earlier. And in classical music news, we have this article titled, "Have You Heard the Story of the World's First Female Cellist, Also an Intrepid Explorer?" This is published on the 14th of October, 2025, in ClassicFM.com by Maya Kay. Lise Christiani was the first recorded female cellist to perform publicly at a time when women playing the cello was considered unacceptable. She was also an explorer, but died tragically young, aged just 26. Born in Paris in 1827, Lise Christiani was orphaned young and raised by her maternal grandparents. Initially trained in singing and piano, she defied convention by switching to the cello. At the time, playing the cello was seen as improper for women. The posture required legs astride the instruments, which was considered unladylike and drew unwanted attention to a woman's body. Sitting primly at the piano was far more becoming. Christiani gave her public debut at the age of 17, and it was a resounding success. One enthusiastic critic even punctuated his review with 3! Her blossoming career took her across Northern Europe. In Denmark, she was named Virtuosa di Corte by the king, and in Sweden, fans dubbed her Saint Cecilia de France, the patron saint of music. In 1845, while performing in Leipzig, she caught the attention of Felix Mendelssohn, who dedicated a piece for cello and piano to her. In 1849, Christiani embarked on a concert tour across Siberia, becoming the first European to perform publicly in many remote cities across northern Asia. She traveled by boat and by carts and sledges drawn by horses, dogs, and deers with her cello, a 1700 Stradivarius with her name carved on the side, kept safe in a wolfskin-lined metal case. One account from her travelogue tells of her encounter with a blue whale that surfaced beside her ship off the Pacific Ocean, possibly drawn by the sound of her playing. She eventually returned west, performing in Ukraine, Lithuania, and in the Caucasus, where Leo Tolstoy was among her audience. Tragically, her extraordinary life was cut short when she died of cholera in Siberia in 1853 at the age of 26. A French diplomat was sent to retrieve her cello, which now resides in the Museo del Violino in Cremona. Christiani is believed to have played a key role in popularizing the use of the N-pin, the spike at the bottom of the cello that rests on the floor. This innovation made it easier to play the instrument while seated, especially for women, whose dress fashions at the time made traditional positioning difficult. Her influence helped to pave the way for more female cellists in the decades after her death. John Powell's Tango de los Asesinos introduces our jazz music news. Argentine Tango. This is an AI overview downloaded on the 27th of October, 2025. Argentine Tango originated in the late 19th century in the port cities of Buenos Aires, Argentina, and Montevideo, Uruguay, blending European, African, and indigenous musical influences. It grew from the marginalized lower classes, but gained widespread acceptance and spread globally, particularly after the 1920s. The golden age of tango music is typically dated 1935 to 1952, characterized by larger orchestras and the popularization of singers like Carlos Gardel. Origins and early development. Cultural fusion. Tango emerged from a mix of musical styles, including African rhythms, the Spanish-Cuban habanera, European waltzes and local traditions in the slums of Buenos Aires. Marginalized beginnings. Initially, tango was the expression of immigrants, former slaves, and the working class, and was often performed in brothels and the city's outskirts. Rise in popularity. Social acceptance. As tango's popularity grew, it moved from the lower classes to become a national cultural treasure with acceptance across all social strata in Argentina and Europe. Global spread. The 1910s saw tango's popularity explode in Paris and around the world, driven by international trade routes and recorded music. Early stars. By the 1920s, the new wave of musicians, known as La Guardia Nueva, began creating innovative arrangements. The singer, Carlos Gardel, rose to immense fame in 1917 and became a cultural icon, cementing tango's place in society. The Golden Age and beyond. Golden Age, the period from 1935 to 1952, is considered the Golden Age of tango. Shift in style. Gardel's death in 1935 marked a transition to a new phase, which saw the emphasis shift from individual singers to large tango orchestras. Modern evolution. Later composers like Astori Piazzolla revolutionized the genre, incorporating jazz and classical elements into what became known as Nuevo Tango. Chamber Music Raleigh brought Argentine tango to the Triangle this past weekend with Pedro Geraldo Tango Quartet performing at the NC Art Museum. Pedro is a Latin Grammy-winning bassist and composer from Cordoba, Argentina, and is recognized as one of today's leading voices in tango and contemporary jazz. He debuted his own tango orchestra at Lincoln Center's Midsummer Night Swing in 2015. He bridges classical form, Argentine folk, and jazz improvisation, and has performed at such venues as Birdland, the Blue Note, and Carnegie Hall. So what then is the difference between a tango and an Argentine tango? Well, the main difference is that ballroom tango is a standardized, competitive ballroom dance with fixed patterns and a formal posture, while Argentine tango is an improvisational and intimate social dance that focuses on connection and musical interpretation. Ballroom tango has a basic 8-count step, a formal upright posture, and travels around the room with broad movements and head snaps, whereas Argentine tango has no basic step, is danced in a close embrace, uses more complex footwork and leg movements below the waist, and can be more intimate and grounded. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, Why Nostalgia is Taking Over Music Right Now. This is published on the 23rd of April, 2025, in blog.push.fm. From synth-heavy pop throwbacks to 90s-style music videos and cassette tape releases, nostalgia has fully taken over the sound and aesthetic of modern music. But why are so many artists and listeners drawn to the past right now? It's comforting in uncertain times. In times of uncertainty, we often look backward to find stability. With everything from global crises to personal burnout affecting daily life, music that reminds us of simpler times offers comfort and familiarity. That's why we're seeing a resurgence of retro sounds, whether it's 2000s pump punk, 80s synths, or classic soul influences. These sounds tap into memories and feelings from a time when life felt more predictable, or at least more hopeful. Streaming encourages genre blending. Today's listeners aren't locked into one genre, thanks to streaming. We can jump from 1970s funk to early 2010s indie in a singular playlist. Artists take advantage of this by blending eras, pulling from the past to create something that feels both fresh and familiar. This cross-generational mashup gives music a nostalgic edge without being outdated. Think of it as new nostalgia, where past styles are remixed for the now. Y2K culture is having a full circle moment. From fashion to film to music, Y2K aesthetics have returned in a big way. The early 2000s, once dismissed as cheesy or over-the-top, are now seen as iconic. Younger listeners are embracing the era's hyper-pop, R&B slow jams, and trill-era bangers, even if they weren't around for it the first time. For millennials, it's a chance to relive their youth. For Gen Z, it's a whole new world to explore. Nostalgia sells, and algorithms know it. Nostalgia isn't just emotional, it's profitable. Music that evokes a certain time period tends to perform well because people already feel connected to that sound. And with streaming platforms tracking every play, skip, and save, the algorithm often favors songs that, quote-unquote, feel familiar. Whether it's a sample from an old hit or a cover of a beloved track, there's data to support the idea that nostalgic music keeps listeners engaged. Artists are reflecting on their roots. Many artists are now making music that reflects where they came from, musically and emotionally. That means drawing inspiration from the songs they grew up with or the genres that first made them fall in love with music. It's not just about copy-pasting the past. It's about reinterpreting it with today's lens, using retro influences to tell modern stories. Nostalgia in music isn't just a trend. It's a way of connecting with who we are, who we were, and where we're going. It blends memory with melody, creating songs that resonate deeply, even if they sound like they belong to another time. So whether you're vibing to synthwave, rediscovering old-school hip-hop, or making playlists that feel like a time machine, know this. Nostalgia isn't about living in the past. It's about bringing the best of it into the present. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this day back in 1968 that singer Debbie Gibson did what? Was it A, she performed a Halloween concert at West Point wearing a sailor's costume? Was it B, she held a seance to contact pianist-entertainer Liberace? Was it C, she sang her hit song, Foolish Beat, for President LBJ at the White House? Or was it D, she ran in the New York City Marathon, finishing in 4 hours, 14 minutes, and 54 seconds? And the correct answer is answer B. It was on this day back in 1968 that singer Debbie Gibson held a seance at her Halloween party to contact the spirits of not just Liberace, but also Sid Vicious. No word yet on the outcome of those attempts. And by the way, answer D about the New York City Marathon finish was actually accurate not for Debbie Gibson, but for the American rapper Sean P. Diddy Combs in 2003. He finished the marathon in 4 hours, 14 minutes, and 54 seconds, and raised $2 million for children in the process. And the answer to our second question, why did the singer Dion, on this day in 1963, storm out of a taping of the British TV show Ready, Steady, Go? Was it A, the record to which he was lip-syncing on TV got stuck? Was it B, he wandered aimlessly on stage while singing his hit song, Run Around Sue? Was it C, the go-go dancers on the set were distracting him? Or was it D, the cue cards being shown to him were the wrong song he was singing? Correct answer? Answer C. Dion stormed off the set of Ready, Steady, Go in 1963 because he claimed that the go-go dancers were distracting him from his performance. As noted by Jeff Berger in October 25, 2020 article in AmericanHighways.org, for a brief period in the mid-1960s, the London-based Ready, Steady, Go was as important to the UK as American Bandstand was to the US in the 1950s. Mick Jagger has called it the best rock and roll show of all time. And the Kinks' Ray Davies has said that there was no other live showcase like it. Pete Townshend, meanwhile, has noted that it reflected the color and vivacity of the times better than almost any medium, and Eric Burdon has proclaimed it simply the best music television show ever produced. Such raves would have seemed unlikely in the wake of the program's August 9, 1963 debut, which featured an underwhelming lineup that included some now-forgotten acts. Episode 2, which aired a week later, also offered an unimpressive guest list and garnered a review that termed the show, quote-unquote, a mess. But things began to change after that. The third week's edition presented a Rolling Stones performance and an interview with Brian Jones and Dusty Springfield, and her then group, the Springfields, appeared on episode number 4. Pretty soon everybody who was anybody wanted to be included on Ready, Steady, Go. Episode 11, for example, offered the Ronettes, Dion, Ray Charles, Brooke Benton, Leslie Gore, Dee Dee Sharp, Mashed Potatoes, a number 2 hit, Jimmy Gilmer, the chart-topping Sugar Shack, and more, all in one fast-paced 45-minute program. By the time Ready, Steady, Go ended in December 1966, after 173 shows, the list of artists who performed on it had grown to include a virtual who's who of British invasion acts and up-and-comers, among them the Dave Clark Five, the Beatles, the Hollies, Manfred Mann, Peter and Gordon, the Kinks, the Animals, Spencer Davis Group, Rod Stewart, and the Moody Blues. The series had also featured countless leading American performers such as Del Shannon, Gene Pitney, Roy Orbison, Gary U.S. Bonds, Marvin Gaye, Jim Hendricks, the Righteous Brothers, Stevie Wonder, and the Supremes. But Dion just up and left because of the distracting go-go dancers. As we leave you today, let's close out this program with Yo Sin Ti, Me Without You, by Charlie Hayden and Gonzalo Rubalcaba. Another tribute to the music of Latin America. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure. Tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information, or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.